Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, and Mr. Dave North Martino is back.
Wow, you used my full name. That's crazy. Yeah.
I thought I'm being polite, you know. summer today, first day of summer.
Yeah. You know,
beginning of the end. Yeah.
The beginning of the end.
Beginning of the end.
That's right.
You're getting all that hate mail. What's that happening? You have your phone number on your social media. What are you, crazy?
No. Somebody, I didn't know you can do this. Somebody sent me a voicemail through Facebook Messenger.
Oh.
And so I had to bleep out a lot of what he said because. Okay. It was all swears.
Well, what's wrong with the swearing?
It's just a love note, you know. Well, you know, wanted to post it on YouTube, and they tend to down.
Oh yeah, rate. YouTube would. Yeah, but you can get away with it on Facebook.
Yeah,
you know, but that's crazy. I love that. I love that you're getting hate mail. Good, so you're getting more popular than me. Thank God.
That's all coming. It's probably one of the people you sent to me, Al.
It is. It's true. I was just checking to see if you had a phone number because I was giving it out.
Perfect.
Anybody that wants to take out there. Yeah, because he turned pretty ugly pretty quick, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
That was really strange. Yeah. Well, he's just having a really bad day.
Yeah.
He's probably just indicted or something. I don't know.
Probably. It was pretty funny.
Sounded like it. Anyway. And so you like the Dolly Parton with, Rob Hall.
Yeah, you sent me that. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I thought she sounded good.
She does, but I like that she's doing it with you know, the guy from Judas Priest, Rob Halford, Robbie.
Yeah.
And Magic Man she did with Hart and Wilson.
Yeah.
I like it, but on those songs I feel more anger from the original.
Yeah.
Do you know when you listen to the original there was kind of, you know, something angry about it or something sinister. And I don't believe Dolly can sound angry.
No.
Do you know what I mean? It doesn't sound, but she's got a good voice and I'm glad they're mixing things up. That's the way it should be, I think.
You know? Yeah. It's fun.
It's going to be an interesting album. That's for sure.
I was surprised because I didn't think Ann Wilson sang that song anymore. Magic Man.
Because of the controversy. But you know, she did it for Dolly.
Yeah. Well, I guess Dolly can get anybody to do anything. Oh, I would
too. Well, she seems like such a nice person. That's why to have her sing an angry song.
Songs, exactly. Gotta get her angry.
Gotta get her angry. Go call her name. No. See, nobody wants to do that.
No.
Well, speaking of anger and all of the unrest and stuff, you know, we have an author on today that's kind of, he's writing about the 1800s and the unrest back then and Civil War and all the problems that were going on and how we're sort of almost back there now today. It's just the names have changed, but there seems to be an ongoing battle. So, his books, he's got The Journey and Journey Volume 2. He's got other ones too. So we're going to talk about his writing and everything like that. So Mr. Gary V. Brill, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
First, why did you decide to write in that time period? Like the two Journey books is during that time period of, you know, the wars and Constitution and slavery and all that stuff. Like, what drew you to that subject?
I actually started it as a short story after reading some articles. I was living overseas at the time in Budapest, Hungary. We were there for 10 years. And I started reading about how people said that if you knelt during the national anthem and everything, that you were disrespecting the flag. And my feeling was that you were always representing what the flag stood for, which was the freedom to express yourself. And so I wrote a short story called The Banner about black involvement in the coming to be of the song The Star-Spangled Banner. And I got to the end of it, and I just kept going. It took on a life of its own. I intend for it to be a four-volume series. I started out with I knew where I was going to start, and I want to end in 1965 on the Edmund Pettus Bridge. That's always been my target to get there. And I figure it's going to take two more volumes to do that.
Right. Well, it's certainly an interesting time. I know I do a lot of the books I write. I go back in time, you know, the '20s and different times. And it used to always surprise me when I'd go through the book or go through the papers of the time day to day. All of the same battles and fighting that was going on in the papers and their version of editorials, it's much the same as it is today. It just, why do you think this just keeps on dragging on over and over and over again?
I think a lot of it's just a human need for one group to feel more powerful than the other. I mean, and I kind of touch on that in the book directly when James's two boys are younger and they ask him why life is the way it is. And he just says as simply as he can that it's all about standing on somebody else to feel tall. And, you know, the belief that some are superior to others is deep seated in most social structures around the world. Power is derived from controlling others. And that's the definition of power, to control others. And that's what it's been. They came to this country against their will and without anything. And so they never were allowed to get anything, and they're still not allowed to get anything. And the wrong is still happening today. And I think more people are beginning to get a little sympathetic to that fact that this kind of garbage is still happening today. And the example I like in my books, the family, the Woodman family, lives in the present day and is always looking forward. But the people, their enemies, the slave chasers, the slave hunters, the racists and everything, they live in the past and they want to stay there. And that's very similar, I think, that you'll find is happening today. It resonates.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just, I don't know what to say about it. It's terrible. Did you have the idea of what you wanted to write before you had, let's say, the characters like the Woodman family and that, or did you have the Woodman family first and then you decided to put them into this? Like, where did it start for you?
I had the story in mind first, and then I gave birth to the characters, and it kind of went that way. And
you're kind of old to be giving birth.
Yeah, but I know. But see the gray hair. I heard another guest of yours speak about, I think it was Wanda Morris, said that she outlines the whole book before she starts, and I can't really do that at all. And you can find, if you read through the reviews on my website, you'll find that a lot of them mention that readers feel like they're sitting in a room listening to a conversation between people, which is how I write. And this is going to sound weird, and I heard you don't like weirdo writers, but
it's not true. Come on, Dave wouldn't be here.
That's right.
Yeah, there you go. But I really do create these characters, and I put them in a situation. Then I get a chair, and I sit in a corner, and I write down what they say. And hopefully they don't notice I'm in the room. They never seem to. But and it's just a very natural flow. I don't really have to do much thinking once they get going, and I just write it all down as it comes. And of course, with a lot of editing later, but that's just the way I do it.
So you really kind of write a conversation, and you kind of watch it and write it out. But that's kind of, it's kind of fun in a way. So you don't necessarily know what they're going to say or how they're going to take the story then, right?
No, never. And characters just pop out of the ether all of a sudden when I need somebody, there they are. And, like the character of May, who is crucial, in the second book, and her description and everything, it just happened. I mean, I had no idea. I was kind of sitting here going, what are we going to do? This is happening, and I need to make a transition to this other scenery, this other motion in the story. And boom, there she was.
Are you on drugs when you do this? Like
No, I don't even. I tried once when I was still living in Budapest. I tried sitting down with a glass of wine and writing some, and I wrote about 10 words. So I don't. You know that you've heard that expression, I'm sure, the terror or the horror of the blank page, and that's really true. So I try to come to it ready to go.
Well, do your characters also? You know, you said you had characters who kind of just popped up to kind of fill in what was going on or to take the story where it needed to go. Have you ever had a character kind of just pull your plot like completely off the rails?
Not off the rails, but certainly change the heading slightly, if I can use an airplane term. Yeah, especially this character, May. She opened up so many more possibilities of what the action could be in a very action-packed sequence of events. I think it's like the heart of the book, really. I don't want to give anything away, but it's a very important and crucial part of the book. It's in the first third or so.
Well, you know, and you have them in exile in Canada. Well, thank God for Canada.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'd be surprised how much I've learned about Black Americans in Canada and the civilization and societies that they formed up there. You know, they invented hockey, for one thing. It's really heartwarming. And of course they had their racists up there too. Everybody does, but the whole thing was just not done. It just wasn't done the way we do it here or did it here, I should say. They just aren't those kind of people. So.
Yeah. It's a totally different, it's a different culture completely. So that's really interesting. So you did a lot of studying for the time period, and how much research do you have to do with something like this to find out some of these details? And it must be a lot.
Oh, it's tremendous. And especially when I speak about real people that are interacting with my characters, like Francis Scott Key, who actually did serve in the Washington militia during the fighting there in 1814 when the Capitol was burned. So it was interesting to make James a member of the same unit. And then Key kept kind of popping up as a character that was very relevant, and he finally becomes a very essential character at the end of the first book, and then he's just gone, really. He kind of pops in once again, but he's not the reason for the story, so he just adds to it and considerably. So my research is, I'm really proud of it. I really strive for accuracy in things like that, names, dates, places, weaponry, the horses people rode, the wagons, everything that I can read about and learn about, I put that in.
Oh, yeah. I would imagine it would be incredible, because you want to get all the details correct. Otherwise, you know, you get backlash if someone reads it and they happen to know something and stuff like that. And with that being said, I guess your setting must be very important. Do you actually make your setting almost, do you describe it like a character then?
Very much so, yeah. The main focus of the family is the farm that James's father bought after the Revolutionary War, when he served with an all-black Rhode Island unit. And his dream at the end of the war was to marry his sweetheart and move as far away from war as he possibly could. And he got a separation from the military. I read all about that and how that worked. And he got a little bit of a land grant, and he went to a peaceful little town where he thought war would never, ever follow him, a little place out in Pennsylvania called Gettysburg. And that's where the farm is. The family farm is there, and is the center of everything.
You know, I'm curious how much literary license you need to take to create a historical fictional novel. To make the plot work, you know, do you need to compress and expand time, or can you follow the history pretty accurately?
I do tend to expand across a little bit of a gap sometimes, and I'll do kind of a synopsis of what follows something for like a year or so, and then pick up the story again. I do that every once in a while, but I really do try to follow it along. I'll say something like when they're on the farm and the seasons, one follows another and that kind of thing, until there's another event in their life that really slows the time down.
How do you choose which real characters you're going to use and which ones you don't? Like, what's your selection there?
Well, it's a kind of a combination. Since I started with the idea of the banner, Key had to be in there because, you know, he wrote it. But the other ones, they just come across them when I'm doing my research, and I say, well, that guy's got an interesting story, and a lot of people have heard of him, like some famous abolitionists and some politicians of the time, the fire breathers down south and all that stuff. I'll get to them in this book I'm working on now. But so it's pretty much, I just come across them, and if they can help me tell the story and make it more real for the reader, then I draft them.
Well, that begs the question, how do you get into the minds of your historical characters, especially your point of view characters, and get back into that, kind of into that period of time?
Yeah, that's a little tricky. I have to safeguard really closely about using sort of current thinking, you know. You know what I mean? I can't make judgments about people based on the way we think today, and I can't have them speaking in a voice of today. So a lot of the editing really comes down to when I get really nitty gritty about it is, would they have said that this way? And sometimes the answer is yes, sometimes it's no, but I really do strive for, I want people to be totally immersed in all my stories, not just Journey.
How do you make sure you get the verbiage right, the language right for the time? Do you have some sort of is there an app for it?
Yeah, I wish. It's goes along with the reading. A lot of the famous people have done a lot of writing, and it's easy to hear them speaking in their own voice from their words that they left behind and the deeds too. Sometimes. Like especially the abolitionists, they made a lot of very famous speeches, but you can also just tell how they would react to an incident right in front of them. I don't think that's too much of a stretch. If something happens right in front of them, how would they react to it? Somebody's kidnapped or somebody's beaten or something. And that's about the only license I really take with other people's voices.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's kind of, I guess you really have to think about it because, I'm also thinking more about slang and catchphrases, things people just say back then that they don't do anymore. You know, things change. So, of course, you know, I was around back then. So,
you and me both.
Yeah, I feel that way.
You know, and there are some things like, you know, the F word. Nobody used the F word. Nobody. Said anything like that. And I got to make a note on the language here. And I also do a podcast, that I've been doing. I have three episodes of it out now. Before I start reading from the book, I always have to apologize to my listeners or my listener and just say, I've never spoken any of these words out loud, and it pains me to do so now. So if I offended anybody or hurt anybody, I'm sorry. And then I read it.
You're much nicer than me.
Yeah. But I do go back and try to find the things where it's like, I don't know if they would have said it just that way, you know?
Yeah, because there was, when you really think about it, there was a different, there would have been a different appreciation for things. And plus religion had a, well, I was going to say a greater impact, and it probably did in some areas, but it's kind of doing that now. So, but that's got to be influential as well. And then the South versus the North, kind of the, they've got to have different things that they said to each other or would call each other. And you know what I mean? Like just getting the little details.
Oh yeah. And a lot of that is written down too. I read a lot of old newspapers and stuff boy, it sure, again, it's echoes of the past in every, Fox News or any of the other ones, you know, that, you know, calling our president a wannabe dictator for Christ's sake. I mean, what kind of crap is that?
Yeah.
It's hard. The language is hard. But it's just a matter of reading and keeping at it. So far, I haven't gotten any comments like, oh, they wouldn't have said that, or that's the wrong kind of gun. Nobody had that gun. So I've introduced a pocket watch into the story, but first I did about 3 days of nothing but research on pocket watches to make sure I had one in the right time, in the right place, in the right look and everything. Right. So.
Well, hopefully we get you some of that hate mail and stuff, people saying you got this wrong. You know, we'll try and work on that. But at the end of the day, so someone picks up book one, and even or book two, what is it you hope they take away from this besides the entertainment and the characters and stuff? What is it you want them to think about?
Well, I think the real point, and we sort of touched on this already, is, you know, I'm trying to make the book and the podcast both. I want people to see that the issues of today they've been with us for an awful long time. And it's not getting that much better. I mean, sure, it's measurably better in a lot of ways, but this urge to isolate the other, this urge to be better than others is really strong in people. You know, and when the Europeans came over here, they brought all their silly prejudices and ignorance and everything with them and just really...
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Went to town with it when they started bringing in these, you know, poor black slaves. And I just want people to think about this is a continuing problem in our society. There's no slaves, but there's still slavery.
Yeah, yeah, it's certainly not over. You know, you can change the law, but it takes a long time for it to blend into humans, right? It doesn't happen overnight.
And denying people opportunity or a chance just based on the amount of pigmentation in your skin is just deeply offensive to me. I grew up in the Army. My dad was a career Army officer, and I had friends. I had black friends and Asian friends, and believe it or not, I even had a Canadian.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, no.
That's really going. But he didn't have to stand during the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
So. we got to be good pals. But I grew up, you know, one of my best friends in third grade was a guy named Earl, black kid. And to me, I never even heard the N word until I was living off base and probably in sixth grade or so.
Yeah. It's still very, I don't know. The whole thing seems weird to me. I don't understand where it's all supposed to go and what do people want? Do you know this whole, I don't know. I just don't get what's the end game here. You know, it makes no sense.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and even Lincoln at one point was sort of behind they call it the colonial movement, which was to send all the Africans back to Africa. Well, of course, by the time they were getting around to that, they'd been here for a couple hundred years already.
Yeah.
And they weren't Africans. They were Americans. It says so in the Constitution. It says so in the law. You know, you can't just say, I don't like the color of your skin, go back to Africa. And the guy would say, well, I've never been to Africa. What do you mean go back?
So. Yeah. It's ridiculous. It's like sending me back to Canada.
We already did that.
Yeah, I know. God damn leftist, socialist, I'll tell you. You people. So now, this is a very important subject, obviously, to you. Like, you're writing out of your heart here. It's not just some fictional or science fiction thing you're doing. This is something that's very important. So I can't help but think, when you go through a process of writing one of the books, and it's finished, edited, and then you put it out there and it's published, that process of doing that book has got to have created or made some change in you. And do you think about that? Do you think about what each book and how it changes you?
I think the whole story is again, changing my heading a little bit. It is important to me. It is. And it's just, and at the heart of my story, and the reason it has a title it has, is the subtitle is The Story of an American Family. This is an American family. And yeah, there's some scenes in the book that I'm actually literally, now this sounds silly, but I'm writing through tears, and I just have to stop every once in a while and get a Kleenex, and I don't want to lose my train of thought, so I stay in the room here. But there's some times when it just gets to me. It really does. And there's a couple of scenes in the second volume that will, if it doesn't move you to tears, there's something the matter with you.
there is something the matter with me, but
something more.
That's a totally different issue, but that's it's pretty fascinating to I think to cover this period and there's what do you think Americans get wrong about this time period and the Civil War? What do you think that's not really interpreted all that well with the younger generation?
Yeah, and I think 10 years ago, this answer would be even more true than it is now, but it still existed. A lot of people get the point of view that, oh, this was a gallant struggle and, you know, both sides were fighting for noble causes and all that. And it wasn't. It was rebellion is what it was. And I think that there's still this thought out there in the world. And as much as I like the Ken Burns Civil War series, he made it sound like, you know, this romantic adventure and these guys were doing this and these guys were doing that. And it was hell. It was hell. It was hell. And in the second book, I have a little big bibliography in the back, a book called Shook Over Hell. I really recommend that to anybody who's been around anybody suffering from PTSD. And it was written about Civil War soldiers in the Union. And I just think there's this whole romantic thing that's going on now, rewriting history or just trying to forget it and sweep it under the thing. But and when people bandy those words about today, oh, we're going to, you know, it's a civil war, and they don't know what the hell they're talking about. It would be absolute hell if that happened.
Right. Right. Well, I think that happens with each generation. They get further out of touch with the challenges and also the struggles and the pains that are forefathers had to go through, my freedom. You take away my freedom because I wear a mask, and you think about what people went through in the Second World War with rationings and stuff. You just, you know, it's kind of an out of touch thing going on there. But you know, one thing, but with the South and me being a leftist Canadian, what I don't understand is, and from as far back as I can remember, movies in the 60s and 70s with John Wayne and a lot of others, they glorified the South. It was always glorified in a sense. And if anything, a lot of the series and shows, the hero was a rebel from the South. So I don't understand that concept and how it became that.
Yeah. You know, and I've noticed that all my life too, living on army bases. And one thing I learned living in, a lot of them were in the South. Did you know that every Civil War soldier or every Civil War statue in the South is facing South so it can turn its back on the North? And they did that, of course, on purpose. It's silly. I think they just liked that they rode prettier horses and had better uniforms and it shoots better in movies. I don't know, but you're right. You're right. It is strictly, kind of one-sided in the Union guys. They're not, I've got to stop calling them the Union. They were the U.S. Army. The U.S. Army guys are always made to look like the heavies and the bad guys. And well, not always, but in the majority of them, you're right, especially back in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, anytime I'm watching old shows, I watch a lot of old shows, gets me in the head frame to do work, writing. And I'm surprised a lot of times about how the Southern guy is kind of like the hero or the star of the show, and it's kind of a big deal. And I thought, well, didn't the South lose the war? Didn't they want slaves and all that, all these bad things? Like, why would they be? And it confuses me. But then, you know, if I ask the wrong person, they tell me to go back to Canada. So,
yeah, right. Well, another aspect of that whole rebellion thing is my dad was a West Point graduate and served with General Patton in the 4th Armor in World War II. My son is a West Point graduate who recently separated and is now working as a pilot like his dad did. But all of those people that graduate from West Point, Robert E. Lee and all the rest of those guys, they stood on the same grounds where my father and my son raised their hand and swore an oath to protect and defend the Constitution with their lives. And what did they do? The first chance they got, it's like, ah, screw you guys. I'm going home and fight for the other side. So I have a really deep antipathy towards the traitors from West Point.
Yeah, I didn't realize. I mean, it's just, so, okay. So you're doing this. So what's the ending? Tell us the ending. How's it all going to end? Everybody's happy and living in Canada.
Yeah. Well, like I said, on the Edmund Pettus Bridge, there in Selma, I think the last word is going to be, oh my Lord.
So when you're doing these characters and you're doing the good and the bad people and stuff, how do you write the bad character? How do you get your head into writing the people that are doing the evil things, so to speak, or the bad stuff?
Well, it's like I said, I did live in the South for a bit, so it's real easy to sort of copy some of that voice. Also, I was a pilot for 30 years, and most pilots are right-wing, misogynistic,
right,
racist, extreme people. Not all, because there was me, but there's a handful of us out there that know which way is up. So I listened to a lot of this crap flying over oceans and continents and stuff, and finally, when I got to be captain, I just told everybody to shut the hell up.
Yeah, that's enough. Well, and then you should have just asked them if the world was flat.
Yeah, right. What are we doing? How does this airplane stay up in the
air? Oh, so much silliness. So, okay, and so, no, Budapest, you were in there for quite a while. What made you go to Budapest?
Well, it's a funny story. We moved there from Hawaii. We went to Hawaii for my job. I was a captain for Japan Airlines for 6 years out there. And when the contract came to an end, and my wife got offered a job in Budapest to run a radio station, a national radio station there for an American owner who she had already interviewed with for another position. So we talked about it and said, yeah, let's go. Because we had made an agreement when we got married, we're going to take the kids to live in Europe for a little while, but we always figured it'd be my job to guide us there, not hers. So we went over for 3 years and stayed for 10. It's a very livable city, even with the Nazis in charge now. It's a beautiful place. And there was a huge expat community there at the time with a lot of things to do and get around, and the kids were perfectly safe there. Not a lot of drugs, no violence of any kind. The whole time I was there, 10 years, I think I read about 2 murders.
Right.
So yeah, we just stayed. That's all, until the government, when the Nazis really started seizing control, they seized my wife's radio station. So.
Oh yeah. I was going to say it must, you're so much closer to the, to the point, you know, with Russia and everything, it's just so much. I would think there would be that worry a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's still Russian signs up, you know, they're written in 3 languages because they haven't been gone that long. Or it wasn't when I was there, they hadn't been gone that long. So.
Right. And the way it's going, it won't be that much long before they get back.
I'm still just absolutely flabbergasted that they were ever let into the EU. It's just the biggest mistake they could have possibly made.
Yeah.
Well, we did look at moving up there actually when we came home, because we're, you know, retired and we can pretty much live anywhere. But you guys make it hard for us Southerners to get in there.
So. Yeah. Well, you know, there's enough problems as there is. We don't need. We don't need any more, you know.
Yeah, no more itinerant pilots wandering.
Well, yeah, you know, they come up with their guns and their ideas, and then they spread it, and things get worse.
Yeah, of course.
You know, they don't need that. Well, anyway, so what's coming for you next? What are you working on now?
I'm simultaneously researching Volume 3, and I'll probably start working on that. At least the initial parts of it pretty soon here. But I'm also redoing a manuscript that I wrote when I still lived in Hawaii when I was flying for JAL. It's an aviation crime, sex, drugs, rock and roll, and a whole lot of flying is how I think of it. And so I'm writing very familiarly with all those subjects. So I think it's a very real book, and I actually got an agent the first time I showed it to anybody, and he showed me all these really polite, nice, handwritten rejection letters from well-known people, because they all said the same thing. There's no hero in this story. This is a very interesting read. You have an interesting style. There's no hero. We can't use it. So, but nowadays the anti-hero is a lot more popular than it was back then, I guess. Yeah. So I'm pulling that out and dusting it off, and I hope to have that out in another month or so.
So you had a lot of sex parties when you were a pilot?
No, I've always been sort of, I'm not the guy with the girlfriend in every airport. I was married when I started flying, and that didn't work out. And then I had a long-term girlfriend, and she got killed, and I had another long-term girlfriend, and I got married. So I'm kind of boring that way.
Oh, that's too bad. We have to change that. Well, that's fascinating. So listen, now your podcast, what are you doing on your podcast? Like, what do people get from that when they tune in?
The podcast is called Gary Talks Too, because my Facebook page is Gary Loves to Write. So this one's Gary Talks Too. And again, I spend the first half talking about pretty much what we were talking about in the first half, about the issues raised in the book and how they are still very much in our daily lives now, just with different names, but they're still here. And then the last half I do a political rant where I get to have a little fun at somebody else's expense.
Wow, you go. I mean, the political thing is hot. I know a lot of people that do those things on the side. Mm-hmm. And they get a lot of attention when there's politics involved. There seems to be a real thrill involved in people fighting over stuff like that. So, you know.
Well, in my last podcast, and I try to do one every 10 days. And the last one in my political rant, I brought up the fact that Ron DeSantis would make an excellent, excellent drag performer's name in Florida. You know, Rhonda.
Yeah. And yeah. And if I hear all those things,
and boy, that would make somebody awfully mad down there. But yeah, I just have a little fun with it. It's really kind of harmless fun, and I don't ever want to, you know, make anybody feel really ridiculously bad or anything. I quote people, and in fact, that usually makes them feel bad enough.
Yeah, that's enough. Yeah, it's kind of crazy the way everyone treats each other overall nowadays. It's just bizarre, because there's so much good to live for that it's just it's crazy people's attentions are focused on stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, life's too short. I mean, I don't have time to be angry and pissed off about every little thing. I just don't.
I don't have time to worry about a drag queen reading books in a library I just don't worry about it. It's just silliness. Until something actually happens, it's a problem. Why all the hype?
Yeah, until some drag queen beats a group of children to death with the biography of some baseball player they don't like. Until I read about a mass murder from a drag queen with a book, I'm not going to worry about them.
when I actually hear about a drag queen actually sexually assaulting a kid in a bathroom, or anything like that, even one tenth of what you hear about going on in the Catholic Church.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, that's just ridiculous. But, you know, I don't know. Anyway. Budapest, you wrote a book about Budapest as well?
Yeah, it's called Driving in Budapest. And it's no more about driving in Budapest than Moby Dick is about whales. But it is about Budapest and life in Budapest. And I think it covers it. A lot of expats read it and gave me a lot of good feedback. And it's five short stories. Each one's about 30 to 40 pages long on different aspects of what it would be like if you did drive in Budapest, that's a rhythm that moves through. It's a common thread through all these people's lives that are in these different stories.
Well, that's interesting. So you're doing social media, website and all that. Let's give out all the information. Sure. How do people find Gary?
Okay. My website is, www.gvb. That's my initials, gvbwrites.com. And, my email is gary@gvbwrites.com. And I have the podcast, as I said, on Gary Talks Too, and there's a separate email for that if you want to connect. And it's thepodcast@gvbwrites. And I'm also on Twitter at Reader Reclusive, and the same at Instagram at Reader Reclusive.
Well, not on TikTok yet?
No, and I'm not giving out my phone number either.
Oh, no. Just when someone asks for it, just give them Dave's.
Yeah,
that's what I do. Whenever the hate mail comes in, I just send them their way. And in fact, I even give out his address.
Why not? Oh, man.
You know? He knows kung fu and all that stuff, so, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's all set.
Okay.
Yeah. He can handle it. They see him out there with that knife swinging around. They just kind of, this is crazy.
They keep going. But I really do love to hear from people. I haven't really received any negative comments. I've had one thing that came up in a book club went in the Driving in Budapest is some of the people were angry at me and said, why did you kill this character? And I said, I didn't kill him. You did. I left it very nebulous. You know, it's one of those things like,
Yeah.
And so when I told them that, you should have seen the look on all these people's faces because they were all like, well, you killed this guy. No.
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah, I did. You murderer.
Yeah. So it's always nice to hear from people. And you know, I'm always very flattered that someone would take the time to drop me a line or something.
Yeah, it's good. And, you know, and the negativity will come, but it's not a big deal. because even it doesn't matter if you really look at the big picture, even the best writer or even Stephen King gets one star reviews. Doesn't matter who you are. You can't please everyone. It's just, you just can't, you know?
No. So, and you just make yourself crazy trying.
So. Yeah. You'll never, you know, you'll end up like Dave out in the thing doing kung fu all crazy because he's got bad reviews, you know what I'm saying? Never going to win there. Well, okay, now we'll have everything up on our website so people can find you with one click. It's simple and easy. And, of course, the books that we kind of talked about, well, we talked about all your books, but The Journey, and it's The Story of an American Family, and we're talking about Volume 1 and 2, and the author, Gary V. Brill. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me, guys. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Gary.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.